Welcome. The Online Learning Task Force will come to order. Today is Friday, December 4th, 2009. It is 1:30 p.m., and this is the final meeting of this task force before the February session. If you are in the room and you have with you a cell phone, a BlackBerry, a pager, if you could please turn it not just to silent, but all the way off so that all of our friends in cyberland who are listening on the internet can hear without a buzz, that would be fantastic. Today, our goal is to vote on the recommendation of LC15. Because we have some timing issues with our members, there's been a request that we vote early on the concept, and then we continue with the discussion, which is going to continue to provide some context and feedback to the State Board of Ed. That conversation will become part of the record. Before we get into that, there's one other piece of business that I want to make sure to take care of on the record, and that is in building this task force from 767, there was a lot of concern about balance, and I think that that is the reason why the Senate President and the Speaker ensured that your co-chairs were both a beaver and a duck. I am a beaver, thus the black, but I do have a green pen, and I would offer a rose to my duck friend.
What I'd offer back. I would say, and I said this, people have misunderstood this, so I will say, I think the game that occurred yesterday was good for the people of Oregon. I did say that regardless of who won, Oregon would win. I would say that it was a very good game. I know that there's always in a game there is a winner and a loser. I will tell you that even though both teams played well, I don't think either team played as well as they're capable of playing. And the result could have been different than the result that we had very easily.
Could have been different.
Did I hear you say should?
I won't go that far.
It's a day of peace, Senator.
I would say that... Can I...
Please.
I would say that some of the fans I was around, when there was a minute and 40 seconds left, and Masoli actually didn't just put the ball on the ground, but ran about 5 yards. They almost lost it right there. They were going, what in the world is he doing? Although he played remarkably. all he has to do is down the ball. Don't take any chances. So it was a rather intense game, but an enormously sportsmanlike game, too, though, in terms of in the fans and on the field.
Well, thank you and congratulations. So all of you have had in your email boxes for a while, and here at the dais, LC15. Before we get to the point of voting out, I wanted to just kind of reflect for the record some of the feedback that we had received and also review the process that we've been through and what comes next for this bill. As you know, this task force has had the opportunity to have 5 public meetings. Over the course of this time, we've had testimony from 2 national experts, from representatives of the State Board of Ed, the Coalition of School Superintendents, members of the statewide education community, and of course also from parents. Task force members have had their email boxes and their mailboxes filled with numerous research papers on online learning, curriculum descriptions including the entire scope and sequence for both ORCA and ORVA, a live demonstration of online programs and technology upstairs. In addition, I know some members have been out to visit with students in their homes, and there has been what I would describe as a voluminous amount of public comment that we have received in writing from stakeholders on all sides of the issue. As I looked through the feedback that we got on LC15, I think that there was a common theme, even among people that had different opinions about what the outcome of certain issues might be, and I would take the issue of caps for one. There are some people on our task force who are disappointed that we did not enforce more stringent caps, and there are some people on our task force who are disappointed that this task force is not recommending completely lifting the caps. And I just wanted to remind the task force that a couple of meetings ago, we broke up into the subgroups, and what we tried to do was looking at the process that we had, what did we realistically likely think that we could accomplish and move through a legislative process this February and come to consensus on as a committee on the short timeline that we had. And in the three subgroups, that actually was one of the issues that came up as, if we looked at it as a practical matter coming to consensus, that's probably one that's going to take a little bit more time, and that also would be influenced by the type of governance model that might come out of the state board. And we don't want to hamper any of those recommendations looking at how might we structure a governance model for these schools. I think that we also are pointing at some of those questions. There seemed to be broad consensus that we want the legislature to come back and look at pulling apart the charter school statutes from the virtual school statutes and trying to get them, these schools, out from that shoehorn of trying to put them into a place in statute that wasn't really designed for them. So that is the reason that part is not in there. In terms of the process moving forward, this bill is going to be introduced in the 2010 session as a committee bill by the House Education Committee, which I chair. The difference between this particular bill and the other committee bills that are in my committee is that 767 called for the House Ed Committee to introduce the bill recommended by the task force. So where other bills in my committee members and I might be able to work with legislative counsel in the interim before we get to February to make further modifications to those legislative concepts, we can't do that with this one because we need to introduce what the recommendation is of this group, and we don't have further meetings after this point. And so that is both kind of a reminder to folks in the community of what our limitations are, and also just kind of a commitment to all of you that you're not going to see something different introduced in February than what we recommend here at the dais here today. In terms of the timeline for this, I plan to have a hearing in our January pre-session hearing on this issue in the House Ed Committee during legislative days. It will be a relatively abbreviated hearing just because we have to hear several other bills that are also in front of that committee. And once we get to February, the way that the legislative timeline works is the first possible day that we'll have to consider, if everything goes right, this bill will be that Wednesday in that first week of February. The last day we have to pass the bill out of the committee is the Wednesday the following week. And that means that we are in a really restricted timeline without a lot of flexibility for amendment. And if there is a fiscal impact statement on this, also because of the timeline, it will likely go to the Ways and Means Committee. And my understanding is that there is a fiscal from the Department of Ed in regards to doing the work that is
a modest fiscal.
So that's, you know, process before, process after today. Are there questions on the process, either before or after, before we move on to the concept itself? No? On the phone, are there comments or questions on the phone regarding the process?
This is Kathleen, and none for me.
Great. Thank you.
This is Kristen. I have no questions at this time.
Thank you.
Larry, no questions either.
Great. Thank you. So I guess I would now open a work session. So I would like to open a work session on LC-15. Is there a motion before we start the discussion?
Yes, I move that the task force recommend that LC-15, dated 12/3/09, be approved for introduction in the February 2010 legislative session.
So Senator Devlin moves that the task force recommend that LC-15, dated 12/3/09, be approved for introduction in the February 2010 legislative session. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair?
Senator Devlin.
Is this the point at which you'd like me to give the explanation of the LC?
This is the point at which I would love it if you would give the explanation of the LC. Thank you.
I actually have a short and a longer, but not an overly long, and I have had a couple of requests to actually do the longer version. I'll try to do that just in a couple of minutes. I'm going to go by this and then I may comment a little bit extemporaneously briefly. LC-15 is designed to address the issues the task force identified as the highest priorities. Some of these issues are addressed in different ways. These issues are governance, funding, accountability, quality, equitable access to online education in Oregon. These recommendations propose a process that will develop consistency and clarity in the statutes governing virtual schools by developing governance and funding proposals. Section 11 recommends that the Education Committee consider splitting the statutes that govern charter schools and virtual schools. During our discussions on these issues, it was many times pointed out, both by members of the committee, the task force, and actually people testifying, that putting all the statutes in the charter school chapter created considerable confusion and actually, in many cases, ended up with unintended consequences in the sense of, who does this apply to? Does this apply to a bricks and mortar charter school? Does this apply to a virtual charter school? This is something that's going to come back to the two education committees to decide whether the statute should be split. Section 92A directs the State Board to propose a governance model to the 2011 legislature. When we sat down and went through all the issues that the legislature had given this task force to go through and chose which ones to put in which categories, this is one where we've actually pretty much said that, at least initially, we needed this to go back to the State Board. We have a very diverse group in this task force. We only had about four meetings before this to actually resolve these issues. This is one of the more difficult issues to actually deal with. We're giving it back to the board, but we're actually, I think the board clearly understands that this is a difficult issue. But I will tell you from my discussions with people all around this issue, whether they're ORCA, ORVA, whether they're any of the bricks and mortar school interests, whether they're the bricks and mortar charter school interests, there is a willingness to sit down and discuss the governance issue and to see if there is some different type of model or some changes in the model that should be done. It also directs the State Board to review appropriate levels of methods of funding. In our review of that, I think we basically found that there was no clear evidence to indicate that the spending on virtual public schools was anything different from what it probably should appropriately be. And obviously there's also the issue that in many cases, both virtual and bricks and mortar, the funding wasn't adequate to do the job that they were supposed to be doing. Simple one, section 6, 7, and 8 requires promotional materials for virtual schools to say that they are publicly funded. Then going on, the recommendation will provide additional accountability for virtual schools and develop information so that going forward, we have hard data when making decisions. Section 1.1d requires virtual charter schools to have the same standardized chart of accounts that all schools have. This is a change we made for school districts some years ago and actually allows for better comparison of budgets and looking at how things are done. I am going to tell you, as a person that has read about 170 out of the 199 budgets, that does not mean that some of them are terribly easy to read. Some of them would take you weeks to figure out actually where the dollars are going. That's just an aside. Sections 11M, N, and O, I'm not going to do all the parent stuff, requires notice to each student, resident, and sponsoring district when they enroll in and withdraw from virtual charter schools. Only public records will be exchanged. This provision actually goes back to a lot of discussions the task force has had over the reality that virtual schools actually provide a needed service to many students, but the reality is people enter the program, there is no way to judge whether they're going to do well in the program, at least not now, until they've gone into the program. So you have a very high number of students that enter the program and then end up going back to something else. And I think everybody here thought it was best that those children, at least we know where they are, so that if they're back in a resident school district, that they can be approached there. If they go to a bricks and mortar charter school, that's fine. Or if they go home school, that's fine. But just to know what's happening to those kids. Section 92C is brief here, but it's actually an issue that's broader than just virtual public charter schools, and it's actually even broader than charter schools. It directs the State Board to develop information on the participation rates of students with special needs. As we all know, issues surrounding special needs children, and I obviously do not have to remind the chair of the House Education Committee of that, are extremely complex. And we could have task forces for the next 3 years to try to address all of those issues. Sections 3 and 4 specify the new requirements for virtual charter schools in Senate Bill 767 can't be waived by the State Board. I would point out this is a lot of the provisions around accountability reporting. There is nothing in this bill, so no one misreads it, that would indicate that the Board can't, in its judgment, continue to waive the 50% requirement. That is still a waivable requirement under the bill. Lastly, these recommendations will ensure that online education is high quality and accessible, and I know that there may be some differences of opinion about that, and I mean everybody that's been here, regardless of who they're supporting in terms of online education, has said they're good programs and they're not so good programs, but this is simply trying to assure that. Section 11F requires that all administrators in virtual charter schools be licensed. I think the parties that have been concerned about that have had discussions with the chair of the House Education Committee or with others, indicating in terms of how someone can be provisionally licensed in the time that they actually have to become fully licensed. Section 11K requires that meetings between students and teachers occur twice a week, not every other week. This is just a clarification of an earlier bill. I can tell you in my discussions with ORVA, and I believe it's the same with ORCA, the way that they had been administering this is two contacts per week per child. It's no real change for their current operations. They felt that was reasonable. Section 5.2b allows a school like ORVA to increase its enrollment to the maximum amount, even though 767 would have prevented that. This is a very complex provision. But when 767, I don't want to bring up sore subjects, but when 767 was voted on the House floor, something was brought forward at the last moment that neither I realized nor I do believe that Representative Gelzer realized. We thought we had literally covered every kid that was currently enrolled and tried to mimic to a large extent the current waivers that both ORVA and ORCA had. What we didn't realize at that time was that ORCA had already admitted students for the coming year, and that the way the bill is passed, they would be able to still admit those students, but then when the bill went final provisions into effect when their current waiver expired, even though the bill goes longer than the waiver, those students would have had to, that number of students would have to disenroll. This basically allows them to go up to the full amount of their waiver, and so we made a commitment to address that, and that's what we've tried to do here. Also, in our last meeting, I explained that Representative Gelzer and I had not been an item that had come up in discussion, but in us reviewing the draft, we discovered an issue that no one had ever discussed before. The way the 767 was drafted, a waiver for the coming school year could not have been granted till July 1st of 2011. That's way too late to be able to plan for a coming school year. So this will allow the Board of Education for existing programs to grant a waiver earlier than that for a one-year period. The reason it's for a one-year period, I'm going to put that on the record, is that we want to have a very open discussion about the governance issue. We know that some things may change in terms of a governance model that is adopted, some may not, but we didn't want to go much larger than another year. The board is actually free after they can grant a waiver for the coming year, the 2011-2012 year, but they are free after July 1st under this bill to grant any waiver that they believe is in the public interest, whether it's 2 years or 3 years or 5 years. So that's basically what's in the LC draft.
Thank you. And I was asking for you to call me. I forgot I had the gavel.
Oh, yes.
So I will recognize myself. I think one of the things that is, two things important to clarify. My co-chair talked about TSPC and the licensure of administrators. That was an issue that a couple of folks raised for our January meeting in the House Ed Committee. It is my plan to have the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission there to talk about what the process for licensure is, including alternative licensure. How, I know at our last meeting there was discussion, what if someone comes from the business community? What if someone comes from, you know, some other background? Would it be too onerous for them to be able to become licensed? And we believe that that's addressed. There is a grace period, but we will have TSPC here in January to talk about that a little bit further. The other thing that I wanted to clarify again, and I think we heard this in the public testimony, that there are families that have children that are enrolled in these schools that are out there that continue to be concerned that there's some action that either this task force is taking or that the legislature is going to take in February that would close these schools to their students. There is nothing in this draft that closes ORCA or ORVA or any other virtual public school option for students at all. And I think it's really important. I know that it's very stressful for families when they worry about whether or not a school option that they're currently participating in is going to go away. And there is nothing in here that takes that away next school year. So if you hear from a family, if you're talking to a family, please encourage them that they can have confidence that this proposal is not closing any schools. And with that, are there further comments on this issue? Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, if you'll allow me, I'd like to make comments. And
yes.
I don't know how long it would take to come to a vote, but I have an irreconcilable conflict to get to. So if I miss the vote, at least I'll be on the record.
All right.
I'm prepared to support the draft, recognizing that it is a work in progress, and that this whole issue of creating the right model for Oregon and Oregon's families and students is yet to be determined. And this is moving the ball, I think, down the court. It's not putting it in the basket by any means. The whole issue of access and choice, it appears that we do have some kids that are going to be left in limbo with the cap requirements from ORVA. I do have some concerns about putting into statutes contracting provisions that are exceedingly strange and outside of normal contracting, and that has to do with the disclosure of profit. And as long as you have a competitive scheme and you have an accounting system, which I think, in talking to the co-chair, accounting system that will give the appropriate level of information and satisfaction to know that, in fact, public dollars are being well spent. I do have concerns with that Section 8, the contracting provisions, but I am prepared to cast an affirmative vote to move this to the next step in the legislature in February. So, thank you.
And Senator Morse, can I ask you a clarifying question about the contracting requirements? That is the language that we had in 767,
right?
It's not new language.
It's not new language. It's existing language. And I think it sets a precedent. It sets a very strange precedent. If you're going to contract out to have a disclosure of financial data, that would be have a very chilling effect on contracting for competitive purposes, and for a variety of other purposes. So I think that language we need to reflect very thoughtfully on whether we want to retain that language or not when it comes first to your committee, because it sets a horribly bad precedent. Because we do contract a variety of services in a variety of different places in the public sector, and I'm not sure that it is necessary. So, Madam Chair, I would recommend that when it comes to the first stop in your committee, that we take a look at that.
Thank you very much. Are there further comments? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to preface this by saying I respect everybody's work on this and all the time that was put in and the individual positions, and particularly the co-chair's enormous amount of time that has gone into this, and so I really appreciate that. After having slept on this last night, as promised, I would love to be able to support LC-15 because there are components of it, aspects that I appreciate and do agree with, and I think we've done some good things for the kids in Oregon. But I'm still stuck on a couple of things that are going to keep me from supporting, you know, giving a yes vote for LC 15. On the TSPC certification of superintendents and assistant superintendents, probably one of my big hang-ups there is, and until at some future point that we come up with a separate set of rules or governance model separating virtual from charter, we're kind of blending a couple of different things here, and we don't require TSPC certification of administrators presently for charter schools, but now we're separating out virtual schools, and I just can't get past that. I have a problem with requiring something of one thing that we don't from another. And if I could sidetrack just quickly and hinge off of Senator Morris's comment there, I can't agree with that more strongly. I mean, we've got road contractors and on and on and on that take public monies, and we don't require, for obvious reasons, disclosure of their business model and profits. And I think it's a scary place to go, and I do understand it's in the original language, but I'd like to look at that. The other thing, too, is that we haven't included language to protect the 8th graders from ORVA. I think ORVA has 74 8th graders this year. Potentially 45 or 50 of them would want to pursue virtual high school. And, you know, right now ORCA, for example, might have capacity to take those on. But what if that changes? I just really think that we should be protecting those 8th graders somehow. And then one final note. I'm concerned about taking away the ability for the board to do any types of waivers. We're kind of restricting some ability, and I don't know if that's a big issue. It's not as big as my other two, but a little concern there. And that's it.
All right.
Other than that, I'm good.
Thank you very much. Are there further comments on the draft? Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I want to thank the co-chairs and the committee administrator for the amount of work that's gone into this task force. It's really been impressive. It has been recognized a very complex and I believe very challenging task that we were given. I do plan to support LC 15 with the same understanding that Senator Morse expressed, that it is a start. I don't believe that supporting it as a task force member commits me to any particular vote later on when something may come before me in the session, and I just wanted to clarify that. I am certainly willing to look at what the goal is of the language that both Representative Huffman and Senator Morse brought up with regard to disclosing profits. I think the ultimate goal is to figure out how much profit, how much public money is going for profit of for-profit companies, so that we can compare. We really are comparing and using our public dollars wisely. With regard to the drafting of the LC draft, I brought this up in a prior meeting, but I just want to make sure that it's on the record. I remain concerned about the plan language, and in fact, when Senator Devlin was describing the bill, he talked about how it requires notice, it requires meetings twice a week, etc. Well, it doesn't. It requires a plan for those things, which is not the same as requiring them. So I know Han is not here, but I would be more comfortable if we want, especially with the notice provision, so that students aren't falling through the cracks. If we want notice of enrollment and withdrawal, we should say we want notice of enrollment and withdrawal, not say that we want a plan about it. It's not the same thing. So pardon my legalese, but the way I read it, you don't have to give notice of withdrawal or enrollment. You just have to have a plan. So I want that clarified, that I would be much more comfortable with stronger language if it's something, especially with the notice requirement, that we don't want students falling through the cracks.
Senator Bonamici, could I interrupt you to make an unorthodox request?
Yes.
Of everyone on the committee. If we continue putting on the record the positions that are going into the votes, we are going to lose Senator Morse, who has to leave the building. We'd like for him to be able to take a vote. Would people be comfortable if we vote and then continue the discussion, the explanation of why we're each voting the way that we are, and we would come immediately back to you as
I'm
the first
finished,
person?
Though.
Thank you.
Can I comment on that?
Yes,
you would
definitely.
Be in the same position, actually, as legislators at that point, because even if we haven't spoken to a bill, we can always, well, in the Senate, we can always rise to give a vote explanation after we have voted. Yeah.
If we do that, is there the opportunity to make any changes after the vote, though?
In terms of the process, we don't have, because this is our last meeting, we don't have the opportunity to make any further changes to the legislative draft, regardless of the outcome of the vote that we have today, because this is the last meeting that we have.
I know, but if we all came to agreement that some language could be added or changed in here, and then we voted,
yeah.
Could that happen?
In theory, but at this point, you're actually approving a draft that will go into committee. And I know that there are time constraints, but that doesn't mean that those cases can be made. I don't know what issue we're going to highlight, but if I'll take Senator Bonamici's issue, mm-hmm. She doesn't feel comfortable with the word plan. She would like the word shell.
Mm-hmm.
Some members of the committee prefer more the word plan because they believe it actually includes that you will, but they believe it's actually a much more complex issue than just simply requiring someone to actually meet a deadline or something like that. There are a lot of people involved in this. There's, give an example, the ORC administration itself, the administration of the Sile School District, the administration of the Resnick School District. We would actually like to, it's not meant as a, we would like the Department of Education to take an interest in this reporting. So the word plan is not necessarily meant to make the requirement soft. It's a recognition that this is much more complex than just saying shell.
Understand. I think the one other thing that I would add to that, even if we agreed here on a concept, we can't vote on something that we don't have in front of us. So for this committee to make a further recommendation, we would have to have another meeting with the actual language written by legislative council, and we don't have the approval for another meeting. So essentially we would be not meeting our charge to recommend legislation in February.
Just haven't done it this way before.
Mr. Temple.
So if I understand correctly, then the appropriate procedure would be to approve this, but then in discussion we might talk about possible amendments we'd like to see in February. That would.
I would think that that would be appropriate in terms of your discussion of why you voted, and I think actually as a person that actually chairs committee, I never assume approval. Right. I just assume that if we go to a vote, the people will vote.
Correct. Right, and that is the assumption, that we get a vote to see where we are. I do want to caution and be very clear about the very limited time frame that we have in February, and it is a very real possibility that a bill that we try to amend in February, the clock then runs out on it. It becomes very much like the U of O player that ran with the ball last night. It is the change that is wanted to be made worth giving up the other things that are in the bill, like the extension of the ORVA waiver, the ability for the state board to grant those waivers on July 1st, the chart of accounts being similar, and that really is the balance that we'll have. Will there be anything that is so important that we want to risk not having those other parts? And it's a matter of the clock. We're all right now at this point really battling the clock. No one more than Senator Morse, who needs to be in Eugene. Are people okay with us moving to a vote and then coming back to the conversation?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, so there is a motion on the table. because I know there's further discussion, so what do I say?
Just this.
Okay, is there objection to recommending that LC 15 dated 12309 be approved for introduction in the February 2010 legislative session?
No.
Are there objections? Mr. Horning and Representative Huffman, are there further objections to that for the record? On the phone, are there objections to the introduction of LC 15 for the February session? So,
no
objections on the phone. Are you there, Mr. Glaze?
I'm here. The only reservation I have right now is that we're voting on this at this point, and some of the members of the committee have had their chance to voice their concerns while the majority have not, and whether or not that is a fair way to do this in the sense that if everyone's given an opportunity to voice their concerns, that may change the way people vote. I don't know, but that's my concern in the way that we're proceeding here.
Okay. Well, perhaps we could have in the minutes of the record that Senator Moore has stated that if he were here, he would be supporting the introduction. Are you comfortable with that, Senator Morris? And we can continue with the discussion.
Okay.
So let's do it that way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Morris. All right, so let's go back and finish the discussion. Is there further discussion?
Well, I did want to finish.
Yeah.
I know I said I was finished, but then I realized that I didn't mention something I wanted to say, which was I do read the LC 15 draft in conjunction with the task force report. And there are things in the task force report that I wish were in LC 15, but given the parameters and the time limitations, that is not the case, that all those issues can be addressed in the draft. So I do read it in conjunction with the report. I'm particularly concerned about the effect on other districts when students are leaving in numbers that affect those districts, things like that. The big picture need to increase more online learning for students in brick and mortar schools. That's not addressed in the draft. So I want to make that comment that I will support the draft with the understanding that we need to look at it in conjunction with the task force report. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
So I was just speaking with Dana.
You have a procedural issue.
And we have a procedural issue now. So how do we table or delay my question about objection and move back to
would
the
you
discussion?
Like to withdraw it, Madam Chair?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
I move that we... I'll do it the classic way. I move that we suspend the rules so that since the gavel did not come down, that the chair can remove the motion from the table, or that I can actually, because I moved the motion, so that I can move it.
So Senator Devlin has moved that we suspend the rules and remove the motion from the table. Is there any objection?
No.
Or that I can remove it. Or that I can remove it,
or
since
that,
I made it.
Or that you can, yes, I said that Senator Devlin could suspend the rules so he could remove the motion from the table. So that the motion may be removed from the table. Senator Devlin has moved that the rules be suspended so the motion may be removed from the table.
Okay.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, the rules are suspended. Senator Devlin.
Madam Chair, I move to, at this time, take back my motion to approve the LC for submission, but I want to emphasize as strongly as the other co-chair has emphasized that this is a body with timelines, that the option that's before you is basically to move forward with this or not to have this move forward, with the potential that nothing moves forward and that you potentially have some of the problem. People are divided on this, and I'll be very upfront about that. This is a very diverse group. I would expect them to be divided. The fact that we have people that are on multiple sides of issues that don't have exactly what they want might be a sign. Sometimes it's a sign in the legislature when you have something that's probably where it should be at that point. Because usually when you have a little some people that are dissatisfied but still willing to support a bill, it's a sign that you're actually have reached a reasonable compromise on some issues. I mean, some of the things that people have pointed out here as issues with the bill, I know that we could not get agreement on in this body in the next 30 minutes, and probably not in two more meetings, actually.
Thank you. So, Senator Devlin has removed, we removed the motion from the table. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion is removed from the table. And I would just emphasize again that the challenge that we have here clearly is that we are...
Word for word.
No, I didn't repeat what you said, word for
word. No, I didn't say that. I said, that's not how... I basically said that's not how Ramona would have written this, and that's not how Judy would have written this, but that probably meets the requirements.
No. Nonetheless,
those are the Secretary of the Senate and the Chief Clerk of the House.
Right. And for this is an interesting task force because we have both members of the task force that are members of the legislature and those that are not. And this is one of the challenges of legislative service is you come up to the point of the vote on the bill as it is and the timelines sometimes start to really dictate things. So Senator Bonamici, have you concluded your remarks?
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair, but I may have more later.
All right, that would be delightful. Is there further discussion? Ms. Regan.
So, first of all, I want to acknowledge, as others already have, that obviously LC-15 is a pretty narrow scope compared to all of what we've discussed in this committee, and I'm really pleased that the report will accompany LC-15, I presume it will.
Yes, and we will have, after we go through this process, we will do the same process again on the report. We also have to approve the report.
Right, because clearly the report has a broader flavor to it. What I'm sad isn't in LC-15 in a deeper capacity, but I feel is in the report pretty well, is the whole idea of how we as a state are going to provide online education as opposed to online schools in Oregon. Online education meaning making online available across school districts and to students across Oregon in brick and mortar or in online schools. Again, I feel like that's incorporated into the report pretty well. It's not in here. I can live with that. The piece that I wanted to talk about just a little bit is the whole question about equitable access, and there's really two pieces to it. On page 3, when we talk about equitable access, it has more to do with equipment and software and the rest, and that's fine. Coming from Portland, when we talk about equity and equitable access, it's more about who actually can access the program. And that's where I have a little bit more concern, and I guess that's where on page 15 we talk about review participation rates of children with disabilities of virtual public schools, and I guess I would love to see the Department of Education also review the participation rates of children in poverty or second language learners or English language learners, because it seems that it would be fairly clear that if you're not providing online education in other languages, that you obviously aren't providing equitable access. So I'm getting caught up on the equity word, and what it means in LC-15 is equipment and software. And so then when I go into participation rates and what that means, I'm not really clear why we ended up only looking at a review of participation rates of children with disabilities and not also a review of English language learners and whether they are accessing or can access online learning, and even children in poverty. And the reason I bring up children in poverty is because most online schools require that you have an educational coach, and oftentimes that's simply not possible in low-income households. So that's the piece I was wondering if we could still think about just asking them to review the participation rates of those other two subsets so that we know whether we're actually providing equitable access across the board. And then one final thing that I just wanted to mention is we talk about asking for a preliminary report on the funding of charters, of online charter schools, and I wondered if we wanted to make that a little stronger instead of just saying review it or report on it, whether we want to actually ask for some recommendations so we can move the discussion forward. But my biggest issue is the equitable participation rates of these schools and whether or not we want to try to expand the language just a little bit so we look at those groups. It concerns me.
Thank you. There are further comments. Ms. Vandersick.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to serve on the task force. I too want to acknowledge the incredible amount of work both the co-chairs did and their staff have provided us. And I particularly appreciated the supporting report along with the legislative concept. I don't want to repeat the comments that Ms. Regan just made, but those issues around equity are just so incredibly important. And I think perhaps it's because she and I were both at a conference earlier this week that really focused on equity issues. But I think it's a good time to reiterate that these online virtual school, these virtual schools are public schools and as such are required under federal and state laws to meet those equity issues. And just as much as we may not have liked some of the things that came out of No Child Left Behind, where it forced us to look at where the gaps are in achievement levels because of equity issues, that has to apply to these provisions of educational services to students also. Equity and access can't just be an add-on. It is part of the core work, in my opinion. And there are certainly things in LC-15 that I wish were perhaps a little bit more strongly worded. I would have to agree with Senator Bonamici about I'm a little anxious about the plan, but I appreciate the word plan versus we will do these things, but I appreciate Senator Devlin's explanation of that, and certainly want to continue to work with members of this committee and our legislators to keep this ball moving down, whether it's the field or the court. I heard Senator Morris reference baskets ball, and I believe Senator.
Stay on court because it's a sensitive issue.
So in Corvallis, we prefer basketball today.
Okay. We've moved on to basketball, so we'll continue to move the ball down the court, I guess, and look forward to continuing to strengthen those the language and the work and those really interesting conversations with the state board about developing the different governance models. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Mr. Temple.
Thank you. For me, I would say that LC-15 is probably a good step in the next direction. I mean, I think it's a good first step. I don't think with the scope that we were given in our committee that we can get as far as we would like to. And I think that's, you know, kind of why the report shows maybe a little more discussion than what LC-15 does. But I think LC-15 lays out the next steps for us, where we need to go with the state board and where we need to come back in the next legislative session. And I think we have a path to follow, and I think LC-15 is going to get us some information to make some good decisions. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Thank you. There are further comments. Representative Dimbrough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, again, I'll join the chorus of those expressing gratitude for all the work that's gone into it. And I really appreciate the work of the co-chairs. And Dana, you've really done yo person's work on this. Just that this report is, you know, it's just a very clear piece of writing, and I really appreciate it. I do think that the questions that have been raised around the issues of equity are central to the conversation, and I believe that they're going to have to be central to the board's conversation around governance, because whatever kind of governance model the board recommends, it's got to be one that guarantees access. And so I don't know, I'm not going to tell the board exactly what to do, but I would think that will have to be part of what the board is looking at. And so in September, you know, we will get the fruits of that research and, you know, see what it looks like and can ideally go from there. I think, you know, the issue of the plan is a concern for me as well, just that there should be a way to differentiate between, you know, when a charter is being written and the issue is being looked at prospectively, in which plan is a very appropriate term to use, and one where we're looking at accountability, and there we want to see that it's happening. And so, again, in the long run, it would be good if whatever form this, you know, this ultimately takes can somehow differentiate between the two and cover both bases. I think those are my comments for now. I just, you know, again, as I said the very first day, I'm impressed with the range of people on this committee, and I was looking forward to some at least initial rich conversation. I wish we were able to have more conversation, but for now, I really appreciate the tenor that the co-chairs have set and what we've done. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further comments? Ms. Hunt?
You know, I think I, too, see this LC as sort of the next step in kind of a work in progress. I know that you've referred to the fiscal impact, and Morgan Allen testified on that earlier when we met. Since that time, we have kind of put some more finality or whatever details to the fiscal impact, and I know since it was referred to, it's basically right around $50,000 plus some money for the board to meet and so forth. But one of the things we've appreciated in the process around the study language is the co-chair's willingness to work with us to work on the fiscal. And because of that, it has been reduced, you know, from what it probably was originally. And also to give us some tools to be able to gather good information from school districts and schools as we work on this project. I also share some of the concerns about equity. It's been, you know, a very interesting process because on the one hand, some of the school providers have told me about programs where they are attempting to address equity and attempting to address at-risk kids. But on the other hand, it's been very eye-opening because I've also learned of some practices and I went, wow, you know, it looks like not all kids do have equitable access to these programs. And it's very concerning at times. So, you know, and these are things that, you know, the department shares. So I know from our perspective as we move forward in the study and other work in this area, that is definitely going to be something that we'll be looking at.
Thank you. Ramon is at the door. That kind of makes anyone holding the gavel nervous. Thank you. Are there further comments? Yes, Mr. Lynn.
Yes, I too am moving closer to providing a yes vote on this bill. However, I want to go on record in saying that as we empower the State Board of Education to review and possibly develop a new governance model for public virtual schools, that we encourage the board to preserve parental choice in enrolling students in these online school options. And I say this because as we're addressing the issue of access, both for students who are at risk and those who possibly are in that category of needing special needs. I think one thing that has come of this work on the task force is that we found that there are some really innovative programs that are available, so much that with a student who comes into a program who's on an IEP enrolls just by its setup, their IEP becomes obsolete because no more are they worried about the issues of emotional stability, socialization in a brick and mortar system that oftentimes can interfere with education. And so as we move forward, I just think it's important as we turn this over to the State Board that they continue to preserve the power of parental choice in whatever model or whatever direction that they so choose to move this to.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there further comments? Yes, Mr. Horney.
Okay, so I guess I'll join the chorus expressing thanks and gratitude for the amount of work put into this. I've heard Senators Bonamici and Moore say that they anticipate a vote in the interest of moving this along, and there'll be more discussions in the next year. For me, not as an elected official, you know, this is probably it as far as my period of time for comments, so that's kind of guiding some of my statements here as well. a lot of the language in the LC is great. I agree with a lot of the tightening, a lot of the regulations and things like that. So where we're saying, you know, it's not everything we wanted, it obviously isn't. But there's a lot of work that's been done in here to protect the state and the students and everyone from bad actors. And I think that's, you know, good work all around. What it seems to me like, though, is that it's half of the concept. Like, there's all these protections for the state and the students, or some of the students, but not protection for, you know, the other students who are interested in this or the schools who are offering these. The contracting language, you know, has been discussed. Equitable access, I'm concerned, but coming from the other end of that as well, we don't have ways of guaranteeing even a timeline for parents who make this request to get an answer back. They could be buried on a back burner and possibly for legitimate reasons and possibly for not, but we don't even have a timeline to get an answer back. There's no appeals process if the answer doesn't go in the way the parent, you know, wishes that it would have gone. As far as the language access issue, that is something that I hadn't considered before. I'm sure other people have, and certainly there's no reason why, to the extent that alternative languages are provided for in brick-and-mortar schools, that couldn't be offered online as well. But for the learning coaches, you know, we have a lot of evidence that indicates that students in music programs do well. If you were at the school board's conference and you saw Charles Creighton's orchestra perform there and was saying, you know, everyone here is...
And where is Charles Creighton's orchestra located?
Unfortunately, it's at the less good of the Corvallis High School. No, it's at Crescent Valley High School. And I actually was in his orchestra the first year as a joint school thing, but that's beside the point. Anyway, the students do remarkably well when they have a music program, but music programs are being gutted and cut and slashed and everything. And even where they're not slashed, the students who come from low-income households, there's no instrument rental subsidy that I know of, or certainly not one that's advertised. So when we're talking about equity of access, that's certainly something that, you know, is not afforded to all people. So it's an issue, but I don't know that that should necessarily be a deal breaker, you know, there. I mean, we wouldn't want to cut orchestra out because some kids couldn't afford, and I wouldn't want to take virtual education away from kids right off the bat just because some might not have the learning coach at the younger ages. The languages that were tightened, you know, biweekly means twice a week. You know, that certainly was something worth going into. The plan, I can see both ends of that argument. I would, you know, say that, you know, planning indicates that we have every intention of meeting that, but if we want to stipulate that, there should be an overriding reason why that hasn't been met. You know, that's certainly worthwhile getting into. So, other than that, I guess we're holding off comments on the draft report.
Yes, that will be a second.
Okay.
A separate and second. Actually, technically, a third.
I think that's it for the LC. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Pimsey.
I mean, the work that's in LC 15, the recommendations are a great start, but we got a long way to go, and I can just speak personally. I can't speak for 198 K-12 superintendents, but there's an expectation that we are going to go farther with this, mm-hmm. and that to wait 12 to 18 months more before solutions are implemented in considering the economic environment we're moving into potentially is too long of a time period. But that being said, you know, we need to move forward. I'm going to support that. But we've got bigger fish to fry, and we need to make online, or as I call it, virtual education, available for all children in the state of Oregon, and that's what we ought to be worried about, and not whether we're saving some online school or not saving some online school, or opportunity or not. This should be something that's for all the kids in the state, and how do we make that equitably available to them when we already know we have 500 schools in the state that don't even have adequate bandwidth to access the content we're talking about. So we have a much bigger fish to fry with less resources in the near future. So I just hope that the state board and the legislature realize that time is of the essence, and that maybe the lack of resources will force us to have a laser focus to solve this problem and make it available for all the kids in the state in short order. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Are there
further comments? Ms. Squire.
Madam Chair?
Yes, and I will put you right after Ms. Squire, Mr. Glaze. Is that okay?
Sure, thank you.
Great.
I would also like to thank the leadership of this committee and Dana and everyone for the good work. And I bring from the State Board of Education an expression of appreciation for the work that has been done here, and a statement of willingness to cooperate in the assignments that the LC and the position paper anticipate assigning to the board, even agreeing that the board would be willing to take a step back and rethink their work plan for the year in order to meet the September 10th timeline that the legislation and the report anticipate. So I think everything else that I would have said here, someone else has said. There are a few things that I would very much have liked to see that aren't here, but I think for the most part this work tackles the most pressing issues, and the board looks forward to cooperating with the legislative leadership and moving some good law forward.
Thank you very much. Mr. Glaze.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would echo the statements that have been made regarding the outstanding work that the co-chairs have done and the many hours that you put in doing the background behind the scenes on these reports. And Dana, thank you also. Also, I'd just like to commend my fellow committee members for the time that you've spent. It's been a good experience for me being on this committee, so I'd like to thank you for that. I'd like to say a few comments here that haven't been covered in LC 15. One concern that we have here in LeGrand, as you've probably heard me say before, but we're one of the districts who this past year, many districts did, went through significant cuts. We had over $2 million worth of cuts in our school budget, and that eliminated things like sports and activities. We actually had to raise $75,000 this past summer in order to have an athletic and activities program in our school district. We've cut our curriculum director out. We've cut other central administration positions out. Here I am, a superintendent of a district over 2,000. I'm also serving as an elementary principal for 150 students. So we've all taken on a lot of additional duties. One of the things that we're seeing is the advertising, and that's a little bitty piece of this, but not unimportant. And here's the reason that I'd like to at least have this on the record. The issue that's raised in LC 15 is that with advertising, we will make a statement that this advertisement is with public dollars. I would suggest that it would be important maybe for the legislature to look at this in greater depth when they do their work in committee. Here we are at district making vast cuts to our school district, and last summer we have third-party online programs using, I'm sure, public dollars to send their folks into our school district to set up campaign booths at the local fair in August, recruiting our students. And from a public school point of view, we have a problem with that, in that here we are using public dollars to go inside school boundaries to recruit students out of your school district. Every time we lose a student, we lose resources for all the remaining students. And so these are some things, I think, you look at the OSAA, they have a tremendous handbook of guidelines to direct and control competition. To a certain extent, there is competition here because it is competition for dollars. So this is something to be mindful of. We'd like to have that on the record. One of the other things I'd like to add, and I know that this has come up before, but when we're talking about ORS 338, and this also is in LC 15, of looking at separating the online charter virtual school piece from the regular charter statute, I'm in full support of that. The thing that I would add, and again, I said earlier, this has been mentioned before, but we need to address also in that statute the issue of charter school districts. Because they are happening here in the state of Oregon, and again, there are some issues around that that need to be addressed in statute. So I guess I would add that to the record to be part of the discussion as well. Thirdly, it was mentioned earlier the concerns about disclosure for third parties and the fact that that would be a problem for contracting throughout the state. I don't disagree with the fact that the contracting issue is a separate issue. However, one of the things that our committee has not done is address one of the key features that I think needs to be addressed on a statewide level, and that's the funding issue for virtual charter schools. My contention that the cost of running those schools is not the same as a brick-and-mortar school, and I certainly won't go into the details of that because we've talked about that before. But if we cannot in some way take a look at those third-party programs financially and see where those dollars are going, there's no way we can analyze whether or not the amount that we're taking for state school fund dollars for this program is accurate or needed. So somehow we need transparency in the process. And I don't have an answer for that, but I think it's an important part of the equation that somehow we need to look at the third-party providers to see how those dollars are spent. We talked just briefly about my fourth point, and that's the attendance for online charter schools. We're concerned that we think there's, because of the way the attendance accounting procedure is set up, that there is a lot of opportunity for abuse here. And again, we think that the way that attendance is accounted for is something that should take additional study, and that people should be looking at this in greater detail to make sure that maybe it's tightened up in a way that is not subject to abuse. Let me look here and see if I have any other notes. I think that pretty well covers my concerns. I'm going to vote to support moving this forward, but I do have to say there are so many things that have not been addressed, and I think the legislature and the state board and the committees that may be assigned to do further work have their work cut out for them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Parent, do you have any comments?
Yes, I'd also just, a lot of my comments have already been represented by other task force members, but I'd also like to give my thanks to the committee and to the chair. I think given the timelines for the task force, that the LC15 concept is a great first step. I think like other members have already stated that there's a lot more work to be done, and you know, I do want to see the work go further, but I will be supporting the LC15 concept as well as the task force report.
Great. I think we have covered everyone on the task force. Unless you had further comments, Senator Devlin?
Only one comment, just because.
Oh, Kathleen Scalise is still on the phone.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here. That's okay. You can move forward because I think what I would have had to say has been pretty much covered.
Thank you. And I apologize for skipping you.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's hard to see people when they're not.
This is true.
Madam Chair, before, no one's moved the motion again, right? Is that correct?
That is my understanding, yes.
Okay. And just so that the committee could understand, all I needed to do was say the two words, Judy and Ramona, and I've had both of them visit me, one by phone and one in person, and we're okay.
I thought you were talking to Ramona on the phone, which is what
I was
made
talking
me particularly
to Judy.
Alarmed to have her standing.
I was talking
right
to
there.
Judy on the phone and then Ramona over there. I went one step further because I technically didn't have to. I could have just withdrawn, but I didn't technically have to suspend the rules, but I just like to because then no one ever questions whether or not you could have withdrawn the motion. Before I do the motion, I just want to put one minor thing on the record. I know it's not minor for some people, and I want to be very cognizant of that. But the issues surrounding contracting are not in the LC. They're actually currently in statute. Now, I know people have some issues with those, and obviously the legislature could change those sometimes in the future, but they are not in the LC. They're in an existing statute. So, Madam,
before you make the motion, I would just like to clarify about the process one more time, because I think a lot of times with these issues, the process can hang us up, and there can be hard feelings about those things later. So what we are doing today in recommending this LC is essentially what many of you have said. We're recommending to the legislature that this is a first step towards continuing along the way to address this issue. It will come along with a report that will be going both to the state board and to the education committees in the legislature about the work that we've done. And as you know in the report, which we'll discuss in a minute, it talks about the work that people still believe needs to be done. And I can't emphasize enough the challenges that we have and that a bill that seeks amendment will have in February. So I don't want to leave this room or take the vote with people having the expectation that amendment to this bill is likely on its way to the floor if the intention is for the bill to eventually make it to both floors of the legislature. A month-long special session is very different than a full-length legislative session, and both as we make the vote today and as the folks at the task force and those in the room that are advocates on these issues as we move forward, I think it really is that balancing act of is this an adequate and appropriate first step moving forward, and other changes we might like to have included, other things that we might dislike within the concept, are those concerns great enough to stop and prevent the things moving forward that we have in the concept? Senator Bonamici.
And Co-Chair, thank you for that comment, and I certainly appreciate what you're saying. However, I believe that Task Force Member Reagan made an excellent point about the limitation in that one section. If the board is already doing a study of students with disabilities, it seems like it's in the interest of government efficiency to have them, while they're doing that study, also look at the two other categories of children in poverty and ELL. It doesn't make sense if they're doing that study to then say, well, we know that this is an area of concern, but you're going to do that later, if they're already doing that work. So I think that that's a pretty minor amendment that would give us a better picture of what's happening. And it's small, but it's a small change, but it's a significant improvement. So and I think that that's something like that I think we really need to discuss, because it's going to give us a lot better information.
And that gives a great opportunity to explain that, with your indulgence, Mr. Co-Chair, this is a great way to explain the procedural and calendar challenge that we have. Because we can't meet again today, as you know, we can't do a conceptual amendment. We would have to have legislative council draft another concept. This group won't have the opportunity to meet again to approve a concept. Because Senate Bill 767 said that we needed to introduce what this task force recommended, as the chair of the House Education Committee, I can't work with legislative council to have them change the draft to introduce something that is other than what we introduced. Because it's a committee bill, and again, the rules on the House side, and I apologize for all of you that aren't members of the Assembly, but our rules are sometimes complicated. On the House side, our committee bills, and this is a committee bill, can't be introduced until the first day of the legislative session. So after we meet in the morning, the committees will meet briefly in the afternoon to introduce the committee bills. Then they all have to be printed. Best case scenario, everything gets printed fast and we get assigned an afternoon. Assuming we get assigned an afternoon meeting time, then maybe the House gets to hear the bill on Wednesday. Before we can move it out of the committee, it has to have its fiscal and revenue impact. If on Wednesday we introduce it and then we have it printed so we can request an amendment, it not only has to be written, but it has to go through the whole process to have the new fiscal impact and revenue impacts done. And the last day under the rules that we can move it out of the committee is that Wednesday. So we literally have about 6 hours to process this bill and about six other not so easy bills. And because it has a fiscal, it's likely to go to Ways and Means, which means it's not likely to come to the
to the Senate Education Committee because we ran out of time. And that is the procedural challenge I'm trying to explain. It's not an issue of the content of the amendment, it's an issue of the calendar.
I understand. I don't necessarily see that as insurmountable at this point.
Okay.
Madam Chair, are you ready?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair. Very ready.
Madam Chair, I move that the task force recommend that LC 15, dated 12-309, be approved for introduction in the February 2010 legislative session.
Co-Chair Devlin moves that the task force recommend that LC 15, dated 12-309, be approved for introduction in the February 2010 legislative session. Is there discussion or further discussion? I had one other question that I was going to ask in response to Senator Bonamici's, and it's a question of Ms. Squire. Is it, if the language in here does not specifically indicate looking at students in poverty and ELL students, is that something the State Board can still do in their report? Can you speak to that a little bit in the work that they're doing?
I can.
Come back?
We are accustomed to cooperating with legislative and other requests, whether they're in an LC or not. And if we know that those equity questions are important to you, we will certainly do that. Those are questions that the board asks about virtually everything. Every time we've had a waiver request hearing, we have asked questions about service to not only students with disabilities, but we've asked about particularly ELL students. Service to students in poverty is on our radar screen all the time, and this issue of equity was a big part of the work, you may recall, that the board did last year. So certainly if we know that that is information that you want, I'm sure the board members would include that in their work.
Thank you.
Ask the staff to include it in their data gathering.
Okay. And I think you've heard there's significant interest within the task force on that issue, so I think it would be
I will be
very
happy to convey that interest if you ask me to do so, ma'am.
All right, I think we have. Thank you very much. Ms. Regan.
There are not the same time constraints built into the report as there are to the LC, right? So we could put a sentence in the report saying ideally
if
it would be expanded to include. Is that true or not true?
Mr. Co-Chair?
I believe, obviously, the report is not under the same time constraints.
Okay.
The only thing that I would say about the report, however, is that, if you wanted to wordsmith the report, obviously Dana could take it and we could make that a conceptual amendment to the report. But we only have today to approve the introduction of the report, so that would all have to be done here. I probably didn't state this very well before, so I'm going to try to do it again. I'm probably still not going to do a good job. I think everybody around the table here has identified to some extent pluses and minuses that they see in the LC. Actually, more people are pleased by the report because the report gets to basically do the diversity of the committee. There, I can't guarantee you, though, that what you think should be in the report has the full support of the committee, because some of these issues that people have mentioned that they're very easy are not very easy, and they're the very reason they're not actually in the LC is because during the limited amount of time we've had to discuss these, we haven't been able to resolve some of these. Obviously, the issue about how the needs of special needs children, whether they are disabled or whether they are ESL or whether they are children in poverty, are all very big issues. They're actually much bigger issues than just for virtual public charter schools or public schools. They are very significant issues. I don't want to go on too long here, but even if one of the issues we got into discussion of this in terms of what the charge would be in terms of looking at this issue, obviously, we could change state statute relative to some of these children, but we can't change federal statute. The reality is right now is that a student that walks into a public school, a regular bricks and mortar public school, and a children that their parents sign them up for a virtual charter school has the very same exact requirements. That's the existing law. So there's nothing in this that's changing that existing law, and we couldn't actually change the federal portion of that. So I just wanted to put that on the record. But we could actually, if you wanted to wordsmith, and people were willing to wordsmith a little bit, we could do that with the report. It's not under the same constraints as the LC.
Right. Is there any further discussion on LC 15? No. All right. Seeing none, we're going to start over again with the previous question. Is there objection to recommending that LC 15, dated 12-3-09, be approved for introduction in the February 2010 legislative session?
Be recommended for approval for introduction. Yeah.
All right. Is there any objection? Representative Huffman and Representative Horning, for the record. So, and on the phone, are there any objections?
No.
All right. Seeing none, the motion has passed, and the record will indicate that the task force, with the exception of Representative Huffman and Mr. Horning, have supported the introduction for the February 2010 legislative session of LC 15. And Dana, the minutes of the meeting would indicate that Senator Morris had indicated his support of this as well before he left. Is that true?
That was great.
So I will close the work session on LC 15. Congratulations for finishing the first half of the agenda. I am now going to open a work session on
the
Online Learning Task Force report. And before you do the motion, I just want to encourage folks to, I know that we have some members that need to leave, and I know that people have been very generous in sharing their comments in writing. Everyone has received those in writing. So don't feel like you're going to get a demerit if you don't speak. You're all welcome to speak, but you're not being graded on the issue. So, Senator Devlin.
Madam Chair, I will move the motion, but I will remind everyone also, and I hate to be so procedural, but we obviously, the rules and the statute for the committee indicate that on the report itself also, any action by the committee has to be a majority of all members of the committee, not just merely those present. So the fact that we might be losing people, I don't think it'll put into question the vote on that, but people should keep that in mind, that it's a majority of all members of the committee, not just the majority of those present. With that, Madam Chair, I will move the task force approval of the Online Learning Task Force report dated December 2009.
Thank you. Senator Devlin moves task force approval of the Online Learning Task Force report dated December 20th, 2009. And before we have discussion, Dana, who has worked very hard on putting this together, thank you very much, is going to give a high-level overview of the report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just the outline of the report, the first three pages are an executive summary really focusing on the provisions of LC 15, which of course is a centerpiece of the report. The first section is a bit of kind of framing of the issues that come up with regard to online education, some information about how it works currently in state law as far as where kids go to school, and how that's kind of evolved as virtual charter schools have developed. A brief outline of Senate Bill 1071, which gave us our 50% waiver requirement, a little bit more information on the waivers that have been granted, and then, of course, the existing online programs. The next section focuses on Senate Bill 767, defines the charter schools and the timeout on increasing enrollment and waivers and the additional requirements for virtual charter schools. The next section also funds Senate Bill 767. It's just the Online Learning Task Force charge. Of course, the meat of those is that we have to issue a report and recommendations for legislation by December 15th, 2009, and there are 15 items from the bill that are included there about what the charge to the task force was. There have been, since the committee last received the report, two additions, and one of those occurs in this section. It's on page 8. It's the first full paragraph, and both the additions were from Kathleen Scalise's recommendations.
and I'll read what that language was. The second sentence of the first full paragraph on page 8, we've added, in general, the task force found that robust evidence for decision-making was often not available. And then the final two sentences in that paragraph are new, and I'll read those as well. The task force recommends that additional studies, including well-crafted evaluations of current and upcoming efforts involving online education, occur. These evaluations could be designed to provide evidence for policymakers that is specific to Oregon, while also revealing methods to promote student learning that can be broadly shared. So I just want to make sure that folks, because that's language that I didn't want to slip past you. Next section in the report focuses on the task force process, which Representative Gelser went through earlier. And this is really a portion where I think there is language that I'm hearing folks really want to call attention to, and that's an explanation of some of the things we didn't do and why, and kind of where we were on some of those issues. So I think this does have some language that I'm hearing is important to many of you. And then the final section is just kind of a section by section of LC 15, and I would like to note here on page 9, I believe it is, section 11F, one additional sentence that's been added, and it says, it would also behoove the TSPC to align licensure processes with the needs of virtual schools and to develop programs that offer licensure to show how programs meet the needs of virtual schools. And again, this is taken from Ms. Scalise's feedback. And there you have it, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. Further discussion?
Madam Chair, if I might actually risk something, I wanted to put one thing on the record. In addition to everything everyone has said about the very gracious comments about the co-chairs, and the comment that I should actually repeat over and over and over again is that committees are actually only as good as their staff. And I would like to thank Dana for all of her work. I would also like to thank Legislative Council, and I'll expand that. I'd like to thank everyone who has served on the committee, because I know we come from diverse backgrounds and don't always agree on the issues. I think that's why we were formed the way we were formed. And the people that have participated in the discussions, both formally in terms of in public hearings, and have sent us numerous emails and letters, I think they've benefited. I do not think that, obviously, the work is completed. I do hope that as people go forward with this work, remembering a comment that Representative Huffman made, that the one interest here that is tantamount is the interest of the students out there and the people of the state. I would hope, though, in approaching that work, particularly the board, because I think this issue of governance is not as insurmountable as it might appear. It will be insurmountable, and I believe I have a lot of confidence in the board, unless what we actually have in this issue over governance is a broad discussion that allows for public comment, which I believe they will do, and actually involving all of the parties that are potentially have a specific view or many views on this issue, and whether that's teachers, administrators, bricks and mortar charter schools, virtual charter schools, whether that's schools of education. I mean, literally the whole, what I think particularly Representative Gelser and I are hoping for, that is that the board comes forward with a governance model, that it has been well vetted, that there is common agreement on the governance model, and that we have some possibility, if we are going to make any changes, that there is support for those changes on day one of the legislature. That's an optimistic view. But that would be the wish, is that somehow people could come to agreement on some of these things. Because I think we all realize that online learning has been here for quite a long time. It is a broader issue than just virtual charter schools. It's an issue for all areas of education. It will continue to expand and provide more opportunities for both students, teachers, and actually for adults out there. It already does. But I do think we have to start to get the policy closer to the technology. We are still quite a bit behind the technology, but we're getting closer.
And so I think the efforts that this committee has made have been very appreciated by everyone. I do realize that our time frame has been very short. I think Representative Gelzer and I had hoped for considerably more time than this to deal with these issues, but this is the time that was given to us, so I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much. Are there further comments on the report before we move to the vote? So there's no hands raised at the table. Ms. Regan.
There was one thing in particular that I just wanted to note. It was just some wording that didn't seem accurate to me, which is on page 8 under legislative recommendations. When we broke out once upon a time, like in our second meeting, into different small working groups, we were asked, I thought, to talk about what we thought we could accomplish for the February session and what we could accomplish the next session and what we needed to hand off to other parties to work on. So the very first sentence here says, LC15 is recommended by the Online Learning Task Force to address the issues identified as highest priorities. And to me, what it really is addressing, what it really should say more accurately, is to address the issues identified as practical to take on during the February legislative session. Because I think it's more accurate. And I think it also gets to the point that, you know, a lot of people had higher expectations of this group, and this is realistic, that this is what we could do given the amount of time we had. So I don't know if there's agreement or not, but I think it would be more clear what LC15 really is.
Now, if we wanted to make that change, Dana, could Bobby make a motion?
Yeah.
That said, is there a general head nodding agreement across the table? Are folks on the phone comfortable with that?
Kathleen, that's fine with me.
All right. Bobby, Ms. Reagan, do you want to make the motion?
So I'd like to make a motion that in the first sentence under legislative recommendations, we take out the word highest priorities and replace it with practical to take on during the February legislative session.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the...
Or practical to...
Practical what?
To address.
Okay.
To address. Thank you. Practical to address during the February legislative session. Do you want me to read the whole sentence for everybody? LC15 is recommended by the Online Learning Task Force to address, I'm going to use address twice now, the issues identified as practical to address during the February legislative session by the task force.
So Ms. Regan has moved that on page 8, under legislative recommendations, we amend the first sentence to read, LC15 is recommended by the Online Learning Task Force to address the issues identified as practical to address during the February legislative session.
That's good.
By the task force.
By the task force.
Wouldn't we drop by the task force?
Because
otherwise
that
would say the task force would consider it in the February legislative session.
Right. So we drop that.
So let me restate the motion one more time to see if I've got it right. LC15 is recommended by the Online Learning Task Force to address the issues identified
as practical
to address during the
February
legislative
session.
Can we say February 2010?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let me read it one more time. LC15 is recommended by the Online Learning Task Force to address the issues identified as practical to address during the February 2010 legislative session.
Yes.
Is there any objection to the motion? Is there any objection on the phone?
None from Kathleen.
All right.
No from Larry. None, thank you.
Great. Okay, so seeing no objection, the amendment is made. Any further discussion? Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just briefly, I don't want to change this language necessarily. It's on page 3. It was, I believe, a new sentence in the last draft that I read. I just want to clarify. There's a sentence in the middle of, maybe two-thirds of the way down in the first paragraph on page 3 that states, school districts with few students need to be able to plan for each academic year based on funding for a predictable number of students. Just to clarify, I mean, all schools would like to be able to plan for an academic year based on funding for a predictable number of students. And I tried to read between the lines with that comment, and I'm just wondering if that's intended to address the effect on other districts of the number of students leaving. I had to try to read between the lines. So if, Dana, if you could clarify the intent or Representative Gelter of that particular sentence to make sure that it's really getting at the issue that I know I and others have expressed concern about the effect on the other districts of the numbers of students leaving.
My belief is that was the intent of what that is talking about.
Thank you.
Is there further discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Glaze.
Yes, ma'am. On the first page, executive summary, bottom paragraph.
Okay.
It says the recommended legislation focuses on funding by directing the board to review appropriate levels and methods for funding virtual public schools, including virtual charter schools. The question that I have on that is the intent of that to also include in that discussion special education funding? The reason I ask is that it's our position that right now the way the law is set up, it's inherent that there's going to be conflict with respect to special ed funding and the dollars that flow to charter schools. From our perspective, given that we're one of these districts that have 15 kids in one charter school district 20 miles down the road, it would be much easier if the legislature would look at special ed funding for these charter schools from the perspective of having the special ed funding flow through to the charter school districts and give them the responsibility for the special education of those kids.
And thank you for that question. We actually, Senator Devlin, correct me if I misrepresent the discussions we've had around this issue in the section on special education, but we also discussed this with some folks at Oregon Department of Education, trying to figure out how do you mesh these things together. And we believe that if you are looking both at how students in special ed are being funded, and if you are also looking at a governance model and a funding model, implicit in that is how do kids in special education get to virtual schools, who is responsible for them when they get there, where are their test scores reported, and how does the money flow. So we believe all of that is implicit both in an overall governance model and by calling that out in that separate section to look specifically at that issue. Senator Devlin?
I actually think that this section was written rather broadly purposely. And the reason for it is going back to the earlier discussion by this group that this issue about reviewing appropriate levels of funding was a broader issue than just virtual public charter schools. It's an issue for the offering of part-time students in online schools. It's an issue for maybe a virtual class that is offered by one bricks and mortar school to another school. It's an issue of if you wanted to actually, if in the future, and there is in a sense, there are already web academies, a virtual program that's actually headquartered within a school district itself. I mean, actually being offered by the school district directly. This is sort of a broader issue on funding because we got an impression that the task force wanted in some areas a broader issue on funding issues. Also, I would see that your issue that you brought forward in terms of special needs children, special ed, and others, invariably will be brought into this because there's the issue over the governance model, there's the issue of the special ed kids, there's the issue of funding that people look at both sides. The school district looks at it and says, the resident school districts have the responsibility under federal and state law to see that this child receives an appropriate education. And the virtual charter school looks at it from the perspective of, I've actually got the kid, and I'm trying to serve the child's actual needs, even though in many cases those needs are served in combination with the resident school district, the virtual charter school district, and the ESD. This is just meant to be broad language. It's meant to be broad language to give, not knowing that the resources for the Department of Ed are limited and knowing that the board's time is limited also, but to give them the broadest possible paintbrush, in a sense, to determine just how much they can do around this area. And I know that this is an area that is of concern to multiple sides of this discussion.
And I think one of them to point out in that, if you look back to LC 15, there are a lot of interests if we're looking specifically at that question about the funding and the assessment results within special education. We've talked a lot about the interest of the virtual school or the virtual school district and a lot about the interest of the sending school district. The legislative the LC 15 directs the department to be, or the state board to be in consultation with the State Advisory Council on Special Education, so that hopefully we're keeping as the forefront what is it that's in the best interest of the student who is receiving special education services. And I think, as Senator Devlin mentioned earlier, some of these issues for these kids are not limited just to issues around charter schools or online charter schools, but are very present in bricks and mortar schools as well. What are we going to do to change things in Oregon so that students with disabilities do have an equal access to a high-quality education as do non-disabled students in Oregon, and we're going to continue to work on that. Representative Dimbrough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to respond to what Senator Devlin just said, I do agree that we should be sending out the message of keeping this discussion as broad as possible. And actually, for that reason, I have a problem with our use of the word virtual, what do we call it, virtual public schools, because we've defined those, haven't we, as schools that are primarily not at a physical location. But we would like the conversation, the ongoing conversation, to include schools that are primarily physical but are also offering, you know, hybrid or, you know, other kinds of online resources.
Madam Chair, I'm going to try to be short and just to say how broad this is. We're trying to cover literally everything that everybody has brought up in here. And you do have the situation of the virtual charter school, and you do have the situation of the public school that has online programs. There have been a few people here that have asked, would we ever consider doing anything like the Florida model, which is actually that we have a public, not a public virtual charter school, but we have a public virtual school, which is where this language comes from, which is why this is this broad. And I'll be just as blunt as I can be. Why we said virtual public school and virtual virtual charter school is so we didn't subliminally send any message to anyone that would create a concern to them that we're now planning to transfer all these students to a public school that is not a virtual charter public school, because that's an issue of choice, or that we're automatically planning that we'll never have an actual virtual public school. So we tried to keep it as broad as we could possibly keep it.
And I think that the intent, and you'll see the relating clause is different than we had last time, we really wanted to create in that direction to the State Board of Ed, this direction to look at generally how do we use online learning in Oregon, how do you govern it, how do kids get access. It kind of goes back to some of what Mr. Dempsey was saying a few minutes ago, and finding the language to do that without sending subliminal messages and without being unnecessarily limiting has been a relatively significant challenge, including looking up words in dictionaries to see whether or not they exist.
Yes. So. They don't exist here, but they do exist.
Mr. Temple.
May I ask a procedural question?
Yes.
So when we're done voting on this, will we have the opportunity for just general comments? Okay. Then I would hold my comment too. I'm very appreciative that the scope of the report is much larger than the LC.
Yes.
And I think it does reflect on many of the comments we've heard over the course of our discussions.
So. Thank you. And seeing no further discussion, is there objection to the approval of the Online Learning Task Force report as amended, dated December 2009? Representative Huffman has stated an objection. Are there any objections on the phone?
None. This is Krista. Not for Kathleen.
Mr. Glaze.
Just for kicks, Mr. Glaze, are you okay?
He's left.
Larry, are you still on the phone? Okay.
Okay. Any? You couldn't hear me. Yes, I don't.
Yeah, he's probably muted it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. So have we captured all of the objections? So the task force has, having received the required votes, the motion has passed, and the record will reflect that Representative Huffman objects. And with that, I will close the work session on the online learning task force. And yes, so now we're going to move on to general comments. Mr. Temple.
Thank you for allowing me to start.
Thank you for coming.
So certainly as we look forward, and at the risk of adding more stuff to your plate in future years, I think as we move into the 2011 legislative session, I'm hoping that we can start having discussions around, in the interim maybe, about charter school districts, the charter law in general. But as I move forward, and this is kind of a sideline of charter schools, but as we move forward, the year 2020 at Scio High School is going to look much different than it does today. And through the process of this committee, I've realized that some of my students are going to come all the time. Some of my students are going to come part of the time and take some of their courses online. And some of my students are going to be completely online. And I want to be able to have that continuity in my high school to provide for those opportunities for those students. And we know that if students have the choice, the 3% of the students that are suited for online instruction, if they have the choice of the three different models, we know that they will migrate towards hybrid models. And as we enable public schools to be able to do that, I think the discussion of the traditional online charter schools we've had here will be less. I don't think there will be as much of an issue because we will be able to offer those opportunities in all schools. And I know that's a funding issue that is beyond my imagination, and you have greater challenges to deal with. But I hope that someday we will be able to have those discussions and start moving forward with education in that direction. And then the last one, I don't suppose in the spirit of 767 that was what I wanted to believe, the idea that we did not want to displace students, that there's any opportunity for ORVA to be able to serve their current eighth graders next year before they can go to the state board and ask for a waiver. So that's it for me.
Thank you. Senator Devlin.
In the LC, as I understand it, and it doesn't mean that they're not different interpretation, and I'm not legislative counsel, nor am I ever and anyone actually representing, nor am I capable of being legal counsel. There may be a slight outstanding issue there about a waiver prior to that, but that 1 year, like to come in early, not during this year, but the following year, to get approval for the following year after that, there is no provision in LC 15 that would prevent the board, if the board chose to, in that year, to expand the grades for ORVA. Now, it would be this next year, there would not be that possibility, but for the students the year after that, if they're expanded in that waiver, then that could be accommodated, the way I understand the bill to be written. But I'm not legal counsel. So.
I think there is some provisions in here that may prevent the board from doing, I think, what you're asking them to do. And, I mean, the way that we've looked at it is that, you know, for the next year up until this passage, the board doesn't have authority to grant waivers to these virtual charter schools.
Right.
So that includes the authority to amend an existing waiver that was already given to ORVA.
But if LC 15 passes, the extension of LC 15, the provision that allows you to give a waiver early, in a sense, for the year that is 11-12, mm-hmm. I don't think there is a prohibition on that waiver in terms of what the board could do.
Correct. For 11-12, they could, for example, expand ORVA to beyond K-8, but that would be only for the 11-12 school year.
Okay, but what I'm trying to put all the kids in order here.
in 9-10, they're becoming, at the end of 10, they're becoming ninth graders. So they wouldn't actually be able to go on. In 10-11, they'll become ninth graders, but the new year that they would become ninth graders is 11-12, which is you would be able to expand.
So in other words, you're saying
there's a one-year gap.
Ms. Hunt, because I don't understand the history of the Orva waiver, I don't understand what the issue is that makes Orva a K. Can you help us understand how that came to be?
I can, and I'll look to Director Squires over here too to fill in some gaps. My recollection is when Orva first came to the board, it was asking for a K-12 school, and it was asking for more students, or at least maybe unlimited. And my recollection was it was just beginning, though, as a school. It wasn't even open yet, and there were some concerns. And so the board, one of the conditions that they granted was a K-8 school, you know, with 100 students per grade and then 600 students. But there was also some discussion about Orva being able to come back later and ask to expand, you know, based on their history and at that point their record and that kind of thing. So that was part of it. I mean, and I'm looking at Director Squires for that capture.
I think that's accurate. I mean, the cap that was placed on, we didn't want to essentially by denying the request for a waiver, give an exclusive right to Orca to be the provider. We wanted to have an opportunity to have at least one other comprehensive provider. We had another request that was withdrawn. My recollection was that once the cap was agreed to, it was the choice of Orva to go K-8 as opposed to K-12, but I wasn't part of the subcommittee, so it may have been that those two things were linked. But I think Ms. Hunt is right that the idea was once they saw how things went and that if they wanted to come back to the board and request that the waiver be extended and expanded upward, that they had the opportunity to do that.
Thank you. Is there... And then I just have one other question, and it might be for Mr. Horning or anyone else that's involved with Orva. When kids have enrolled, and you're kind of talking about the spirit of 767, at the time of enrollment, did parents understand that that was a K-8 school, or were there... was there like written suggestion that when they got to the eighth grade that it was going to be? I think that that's where I'm kind of 767 was hold everybody harmless, don't grow anything, don't make anything new. It seems like changing the character of a school maybe makes it new, and so you have these conflicting values of, you know, protect the kids that are there, but also in the spirit of that, have everything on hold while we find a governance model. Don't make everything.
The first parents of eighth grader, well, actually seventh and eighth graders, because it was a two-year waiver, knew that there would be some issues transitioning into high school if they chose to continue in that method. But at that time, 767 wasn't around. So the idea was always that we've got some problems coming up over the next, you know, year to 2 years, and then, you know, assuming that the Orva model holds here like it did in the 38 other states that, you know, it's operating, we'd come back in 2 years, show that the students are making adequate progress, show that we're being good, you know, corporate citizens and public partners, and ask for the lifting or at least raising of the cap and the additional 4 years for high school.
And so one further question, since this has been the way that the school's operated for a while, what happened to students who were eighth graders last year?
They had to find another option. And with the caps and the waiting list at Orca, there wasn't a comprehensive online option for them. They either, you know, went to a public school, went to a charter school, went back to homeschooling, dropped out. They went somewhere else.
And so if we don't make a change in February to increase that, the students who are eighth graders this year would be in the same situation as the eighth graders last year.
They would need to find another option.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Yes. There was information that came today, close to the time of the hearing, including an article and a letter from Marshall Koba, and we will get those to the committee electronically, so watch your email boxes for those. Any further discussion? I would just add, this has been a great group to work with, and I thank each of you for the enormous amount of time that you have put into this. I know that the written materials that you've received have been voluminous, and I know that many of you have had to drive a great distance to be part of meetings and to be fairly flexible with your schedule as times have changed. In anticipation of the work to come, I'd like to offer my pre-thanks to the State Board of Education, who will be taking this ball from us as we move forward. All of the people that Senator Devlin thanked, but including Anna and Autumn and Chris, right, who are Senator Devlin and my staff folks who have done a lot of work on this behind the scenes. And in addition to the work that we've done here, I just really want to thank each of you that are on the task force and all of you that have been part of the work and discussion of the task force. This is a very divisive issue that people have very strong feelings about. There is a lot of passion about this issue, and I have been so appreciative of the tone of this discussion over the last several months. And while I think there is actually consensus that although we might not agree on which things, many people wish that we could have done more, I believe that we could not have accomplished as much as we did in LC 15 without the tenor of the discussion that all of you have made possible. And I appreciate that, and it's my hope that as we continue talking about these issues moving forward, both in January and again in 2011, that we can continue this this level of a discussion that is open and sometimes heated, but assumes the best motives in other people. Because even though we look at these things from different directions, I really do believe that everyone that is involved in this cares very much about students in Oregon and wants to make sure that we're doing the very best that we can for those students. And so I just thank you all for your commitment to them and your commitment to this issue as we move forward. Senator Devlin, do you have any? All right. Thank you all very much.
One closing. I don't want people to leave here, you know, thinking my no vote is a negative. Part of it's because of the legislative process as much as anything, and if we're under, I mean, we're under the mandate of the bill, and so the task force has to push forward the bill that's going to be voted on, and so it's more of a procedural thing. Like I want to reiterate, there was a lot of good in LC-15, and so I just didn't want people leaving thinking that I was the guy that was negative about it, because, you know, by and large, I'm not.
And you'll get another whack at the apple in just a couple months on the committee. So, we'll thank you all very much. And with that, I will adjourn with thanks the Online Learning Task Force.